Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. We're back after an all too long hiatus, and our first guest this new season is none other than a very fascinating character, Rabbi Asher Gershberg.
Gershberg. It's okay.
Gershberg. It's okay.
I'm very flexible.
Yes. Good evening, Rabbi Gershberg. How are you?
I couldn't be better because suddenly somebody is interested in what I've got to say, and I can think clearly if God lets me, and I become so popular that I wouldn't need any attention from anybody else, so I'll be a freer person. So I'm very grateful.
Excellent. Okay. One of the reasons that we decided to bring you on our show is you've had a very fascinating life. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what made Rabbi Asher Gershberg the man he is today. Tell us a little bit about the various transitions you went through in life.
Yeah.
And how you got into food.
Very good. As I'm innately very, very humble, and I'm prepared to confess to my humility, unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Creator, had to give evidence of his humility. But I have to be courageous and get away with something. So, before you are born, nobody's asking you whether you want to go to Mars or you want to go to Washington or you want to go to, Ramallah. You know, it depends. So I was born in Poland, and the Nazis decided that I would be disturbing the European peace of mind and peace. So they declare war on the Jews, including me. So I arrived to Poland, and I realized, and my parents, of course, realized, and my mother, Alea Sholem, she was a very sophisticated lady, and she worked for my grandfather, who had a bank, and she used to travel in Europe, and in 1936, she went to Berlin, and she heard the monster, the one who so-called created the Holocaust, talk. And she was so agitated, so amazed that the way he spoke and his voice was so inhuman. So she realized that he's serious. So she traveled back to Poland and told my father that this monster is serious. It's not just a political declaration of war on the Jews because the anti-Semites would cooperate with them. So then my family decided to leave, and they were blessed that the British government, they issued 10,000 certificates to the Agudas, 1,000 certificates to Agudas Yisrael after 10,000 certificates, because they were so vicious, they were closing the gates of the Holy Land from the persecuted Jew of Europe. So somebody paid $40,000 for 4 certificates, and we ended up in Jerusalem, and we left Poland, and that's the way I was spared. At the same time, I don't understand why the people who weren't spared and went to the gas chambers, after all, I can't at all think that I was better than them. So obviously, maybe I was spared in order to talk tonight to all of you. So thank you, God, for allowing me to be here to speak. After that, I was educated in Palestine, and then the Declaration of Independence. And then,
how old were you at the time?
I was about 11, 10, 11, something like this.
Okay, at the time of the Declaration of Independence, you mean?
Yes, and of course
okay.
I was in Jerusalem, and we were surrounded by the Jordanians, and there were bombs, and we were in a base, in a cellar. And at one point, I said, "I'm not going to stay in Jerusalem. I'll run away to Tel Aviv." And I did. And my mother looked for me for 3 days. And so I think I'm still suffering for this because I didn't tell my mother that I'm leaving the sieges Jerusalem. So. What else?
A small oversight, I understand.
Anyway, I went to yeshiva, to Navadak yeshiva, and I was also, my mother and father wanted me to be very sophisticated, so I learned English, and I also, they wanted to be able to talk and be in the world rather than just in Jerusalem and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I decided at the age of 18, even though I didn't have to go to the army because I was so-called religious, and I'm using the word religious in a very careful way because basically I don't believe in religion. I'm a disciplined Jew because I want to go to heaven. I know that in heaven there'll be sweet, righteous people. So why even consider going to the other place? So I went to the army. I didn't have to because I could have escaped by declaring that I'm religious, but I didn't feel that I should do it because I felt it wasn't honest. So I was in Golani, Gdut 13, with people from the kibbutzim, and they didn't know what I was talking about if I mentioned Torah. They said, "What is that?" And they had very big muscles because they worked, and they felt sorry for this religious boy from Jerusalem. So they helped me to carry, to do this, and I was very spoiled in Golani. And after that, I realized the whole thing. There was a confrontation with the Syrians, and I wasn't happy about the whole idea of war. And, so I decided that the army is not for me. And then they took me to a platoon, to a place in Jerusalem that I was with a liaison officer with the United Nations. So that's the way it happened to me during the army service. After that, I decided that I'm going to go to England, because in England people are not screaming, and there's a Queen of England, and I would have an easier life than in Jerusalem. But before that, I had to make some money, so somebody told me that they need somebody who speaks English and Hebrew for the Zionist Congress. And the head of it was Nahum Goldman, Dr. Nahum Goldman. So somebody introduced me to him.
From Yeshivas Nevardok, you came all the way to become the secretary of the leader of the Zionist
Yeah, but
movement.
I was.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he liked me on the spot because he had some inkling to Jewishness because he was a Jew and he was a Zionist and he was the head of this Zionist Congress, and his private secretary was not Jewish and she only spoke German. And he changed his suit 3 times a day. He had many, many suits. And for some reason, he changed his suit every 4 hours. I never asked him because I wanted to be respectful. So maybe I'll find out maybe one day why he did it. And I had the audacity to change things in the decision of this Zionist Congress in Jerusalem that year. And I didn't tell anybody because they couldn't check my Hebrew because I knew better Hebrew than everybody. So I used words from the Talmud. And so if I would like to get a copy of the decision of that Zionist Congress. It would be very interesting. And Chaim, you reminded me of it because I forgot about it. I didn't think it was that important.
Oh, I thought it was a very, very colorful chapter of your life, something that's worthy
really?
Of being repeated.
Yeah, okay, so I don't have to make al-chet shechatanu. You don't think I have to ask forgiveness for... By the way, Nahum Goldman, I would say Alav HaShalom, walked away from Zionism at a late age. So,
yes, he became a, quote, post-Zionist, unquote.
Yes, and I maybe I'm to blame. I don't want to take such honor, but I think I spoke to him about Zionism versus Jewishness and the fact that there would be a conflict in terms of the essence of the Jew. He would become a Zionist first and a Jew second. And he was listening to me. He said that the main thing is survival after what happened in Auschwitz. So survival is the first thing. So if we need atom bombs or we need anything, we have to survive, because it looks like we cannot rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us from the gas chambers. Where was he at the time? And of course, most people didn't have a clear answer. Of course, the Satmar Rebbe, Zchusuy Yagen Aleinu, Rav Yoelish, he had the answer that Mipnei Chataenu, the classical response, mm-hmm. that because we are sinful, we are paying a penalty. Because we are sinful, we lost the first and second temple. Because we are sinful, we are assimilated. You know, it's very, very, how should I say, comforting to know that there is a reason why we are suffering. So it's our fault, nobody else's. So David HaMelech was wise enough and holy enough to say to Natan HaNovi, Chatati. Adam HaRishon didn't have, even though he had the connection, of course, to David HaMelech. Adam is Adam, David, Mashiach, Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah, not only didn't he, but he blamed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know.
Yes, he said, Ha'isha Asher Nosata Li. Meaning,
right.
If
you
God
gave
didn't
it to
give
me,
him
so what,
cover.
What are you blaming me for, right? Of course.
Actually, he could have said, I failed. So you would have said in the Garden of Eden, and Chava would have had to go to Washington, D.C., and be a politician. So instead of that, we have other Jewish people who are very lovely people, but they have decided to join the Goyish camp. Because it's easier, you know, it's easier to be a Jew without having a clear identity. So you are tolerated. You're just one more nation. You're not the chosen people.
Okay.
Because if you're chosen, you might be chosen for being to suffer. Who wants to be chosen to suffer, you know? Like they say
on a more,
the roof.
On a more serious note, although what you said was quite serious, let's face it, you came quite a bit of a ways and around again, back to your original roots. But in the meantime, how did you get into food?
Well, when I was born, on Shushan Purim, and my mother was a midwife herself. She was, and the midwife was there. And I think when I was one day old, they were both, because it was Shushan Purim, of course I'm not that serious about it, they were drunk. And then I decided to also be drunk. So that's what I started to be interested in food, starting with Shushan Purim. And fortunately, my mother was educated very well in the food, in the health, because she went to Odessa University to study medicine. So we were at home in Jerusalem. We ate carefully. And at a certain point in my life, when I was young, about 10, 11, I went to a slaughterhouse near Jerusalem that was, there was a veterinary doctor called Dr. Kirsch, and I saw a slaughter of a little camel, and I put off any form of meat or chicken, so I sort of became a vegetarian. Even though my parents didn't agree with me because they said what would happen on Shabbos, how would you, you know, you have to have meat and wine. I said, wine, okay, organic wine, but like I'm now involved in it. But meat, I thought, I'd rather not. So the whole thing was healthy background as a youth, and also the realization that we have to be careful of what we eat because it will affect our body and our essence. So food was very always something that I was involved in. And then I went to England.
How did you come to start the De La Rosa company?
30 years ago, roughly. Actually, I started to be organic and vegetarian, and I had a very successful center in London. I lived in London for over 20 years, and it was called Cyrano, C-Y-R-A-N-O, Cyrano de Bergerac.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a vegetarian, a kosher, organic center. It had two restaurants and a bakery and a health food store, and I was very, very popular. I was a Jew that the non-Jewish snobs of Hampstead and other places and Mayfair thought that I was okay. I had good taste, and I was not, I wasn't against non-Jewish people, and I was vegetarian, and the Lady Dowding opened my restaurant, and she was the widow of the Earl Marshal of England and the head of the Soil Association. And I had people like, aristocrats who came to my place. So I was very, very, it was very successful. So food and organic and vegetarian, I thought I'm going to bring I'll stop anti-Semitism and there'll be a common denominator and everybody will be feeling sorry for chickens and cats. And then, Mashiach will come. And I'll be happy. I'll be doing a great thing. So my place was definitely a precursor for peace between Jews and non-Jews. And in my place, in this Cyrano place, which, by the way, the upstairs was called Zen, Z-E-N, is the place is there. They cannot change the building because when I built it, it became historically preserved. So now it's called only Zen, and it's owned by a conglomerate from Hong Kong, and it's a Chinese thing. But I couldn't.
So I think it's no longer kosher.
So, what?
I think it's no longer kosher.
It's not vegetarian. It's not kosher. And I sold it very well at 39 years ago, and I gave it up, and I decided that I don't want to be in business, I don't want to be popular, I don't want to do anything. I'll go take care of my mother in Jerusalem, and I would learn in the Kollel of Karlin, and be, tzaddik, talmid chacham, sage, and I'll go to heaven, and without any great success in the material world. So that happened 39 years ago. And
so
the decision, by the way...
So at some point you decided to come to the States?
The first time I came to the States was when I was about 24, 25. It was a very strange coming to the United States. It was obviously arranged in heaven. And I met my first wife, Aleah Shalom, and she was an American from a very assimilated family that were almost ashamed to admit they're Jewish. but she knew exactly what Jewish is, and she knew what happened in Europe, and it's amazing. It was, and it was arranged in a very miraculous way. It would take really too long to tell you, because it was not in my hands, totally not in my hands. I was controlled, because I met Preminger in London when I was in London. If you remember Otto Preminger, film producer, I was sitting in the Dorchester in Park Lane in London, and he saw me having tea, and he came to me. I didn't know who he was. And he told me, "Hey, who are you? I like the way you look." So I said, "Who are you? Why should I tell you who I am?" He said, "My name is Otto Preminger." I said, "I never heard of you." He said, "Oh, I like you even more." I said, "Why?" He said, "I'm making a film called Exodus, and I need somebody like you, because I can see you're a Jew and this, and I need some locations for the film Exodus." He did it with Paul Newman, if you remember.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So, and there was
some starlet. He was the Jewish British officer, yes.
What? And there was some starlet.
Paul Newman
was
the guy who was, he disguised himself as a British officer. But
that's
he was
right.
A member of the Haganah, yes.
Yes, yes. The whole film, the story was based on a book by Leon Uris.
Right,
if I could
right.
Call. Anyway, so we got on. He looked at me as the Jewish connection, because he was totally assimilated. And I think he married a non-Jew, which was nothing wrong. I mean, if you look like Marilyn Monroe and Arthur Miller falls in love with you, you even decide that maybe it would pay to become Jewish. Why not? Why not? So anyway, so then I went to Hollywood after working with him. He said, "Why don't you go to Hollywood, to UCLA, and learn some filmmaking? And then you can help me, because you are spiritual, you are Jewish. Maybe we could do something, you know?" Mm-hmm. So I went to Hollywood for 3 months, and I couldn't take it. I met Marlon Brando. And Elvis Presley was dancing on a bar thing. And after 3 months, I thought, I've had it. So I went back to Manhattan on my way to London. And then I met my wife, Alea Shalom. And that was the beginning of my career in America. So ask me more questions that I try to recall.
Okay. We still not get around to how you started the De La Rosa company.
De La Rosa was, I came here again back to America, and I was a good friend of Shia Herzog of Kedem. I lived in Monsey, and, you know, very friendly, very, very lovely person, very friendly and very sweet. Shia Herzog, the head
right.
of the, you know, and I told him that my background, organic, healthy, I said Jewish people must become healthy. There is one mitzvah, nishmartem or nishmartem me'odel nafshasechem, which is totally in Keren's office, in a corner, neglected. And it's written a Jew should always look for neglected mitzvahs or neglected Jews.
Right.
So that right. mitzvah of being healthy was not very popular. We have doctors, we have surgeons, we have antibiotics. We don't need this thing of, organic. It has worms, it has bugs. You know, who knows? So it became... So I told him, so he was, you know, we got on. So he said, "Okay, what should we do?" I said, I found something in Europe called grape seed oil, which is sold in the pharmacies to reduce cholesterol, and it doesn't burn. And I know Dr. Nash from Syracuse Clinic, Heart Clinic. He told me that it's very good for the heart. I befriended him. So why don't we sell grape seed oil for Pesach because it's not kidneys and it doesn't burn and it's healthy for the cholesterol. So why don't we do it? And then we can do also olive oil. So Kedem, so I started De La Rosa because there was a very special Jew in Morocco called David De La Rosa, and I thought De La Rosa sounds like not Jewish, so I would appeal to the non-Jewish world. They know it's kosher, but kosher is blessed, but De La Rosa is Spanish, so I would cover all my bases. So that's the beginning of De La Rosa. And, yeah, carry on. Ask me more nice questions.
And when De La Rosa started, you started out, you remember,
sorry?
With grapeseed oil and extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah, and organic. I also tried to influence Kedem to do organic, but in the beginning they weren't very excited about the idea
very
of organic
receptive.
Because the organic is bugs and worms and bobomyces, you know. What's wrong with worms? David HaMelech compares it to La'at Ani. I'm a worm. So if David HaMelech can afford to call himself a worm, we can eat organic food.
I hope
you don't mind.
Not at all. As we go along a little bit further.
Yes.
You branched out into more than just olive oil and grapeseed
yes.
oil.
That's right.
What were some of the other products that you started?
Very good. After a few years, Kedem decided to go on their own, and I went on. I mean, basically, very sweet people. I really like the Kedem brothers, the Herzog, very lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started, so I did it myself. I decided to distribute to myself. And I had a truck and a warehouse. And I started. I decided I'd bring more things. So I had very good friends in Italy. And we got, and from Morocco. Well, now we are having Oliver from Morocco. And I met a very good person in Austria called Hafner, Julius, and became friendly, and we decided to go.
Is that the same as the Hafner Winery or a different family?
Yeah, it's the same, but we are selling it under De La Rosa because
right, I understand.
You know, we have a special relationship, and we
mm-hmm.
discovered that Hafner's wife is Jewish. And he has 4 Jewish children. When he discovered it, she didn't know she was Jewish, from Romania. And
mm-hmm.
Her mother disclosed to her that during the war she hid it and so on, you know. So she's Jewish. So he knows now that he has 4 Jewish children. So he called me. I said, no, Julius, that's it. You have 4 Jewish children. So what do you do with the anti-Semites in
Austria?
In Austria. I said, well, that now you have a real challenge. So this is so we are going to have the organic wine soon. We have ordered it. You heard it? We have ordered it, the wine. And we have incredible grape juice, organic grape juice that nobody has in the world that is specially made for us. And we're going to an amazing. We call it, of course, De La Rosa, but we have put a, sort of a little trademark called Wow, Wow, W-O-W, and it's a pronunciation of the Yemenite Jew of the 6th letter of the alphabet. So it's basically I have Wow with the letter Vav, and then the whole world would realize that the Yemenite pronunciation is superior. So this would be the Wow grape juice.
Very interesting. Now, some of the, one of the wines that I had the pleasure of tasting was a Tarjag Grüner Veltliner.
Sorry?
I had the Grüner Veltliner wine.
Yes, yes.
The dry white.
Yes.
I found it very, very interesting.
What I understand, we have 13 wines, 13 wines, right?
13 different ones.
13 organic wines.
Mm-hmm.
And grappa, which is organic, which is our usual drink, because it's ideal for Pesach, especially if, I mean, let's say the Lubavitchers would love grappa because it's not whiskey and it's not this. It's from wine. And we have a wonderful hersher of my good friend called Aviona Schwartz, Marv Asra of Vienna. Was a friend of mine in England, and he's a Satmer Chosid. So I hope the Satmer Hasidim would forgive me for speaking Hebrew sometimes. I don't know. We have to hear. Actually, the Satmer Rebbe's
I once went to listen to a nephew of Baba Sali who came to Brooklyn. And there were some Hasidim there. And, of course, he spoke Hebrew. So the guy sitting next to me says to one of them, Nu, Eret Hebraish, die verstehst? And his answer was, Eret nicht Hebraish, Eret Sfardisch.
Listen,
he doesn't speak Hebrew, he speaks Sephardic.
Reb Chaim, the distance between Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue, Lashon HaKodesh, and modern Hebrew has a long distance. The
pronunciation, of course.
The Yemenite pronunciation is the correct pronunciation.
Or at least the closest Sonnenfeld, to whatever
Yosef
the original Chaim was.
Sonnenfeld, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, my name is associated with his name, Yosef Chaim, 3 months before he parted from this world, and I know it for sure, there's no doubt about it, because I knew the Yemenite Mori, the so-called rabbi, who lived in Jerusalem, not far from Rav Sonnenfeld. He asked to learn the pronunciation of the Yemen of Lashon HaKodesh in Yemenite pronunciation. Het, the Ein, the Ra, the Wow, and so on. So, fine, so people didn't know what happened. Nobody knew that he was leaving this world, and nobody said anything. But 3 months before his departure, he started to learn Havara Temanit, the Yemenite pronunciation, and then he passed away at the age of 3 months. So we had an idea that obviously in heaven they speak in Yemenite pronunciation, but I can't prove it. This is only a svara, you know. It's only.
I understand, and
knows?
None of us are in a hurry to find out for sure yet.
No, but just in case it's true, I very much try to say het, the ayin, and the dalet. Then you say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echaz. The dalet at the chaz is like the pronunciation is this. TH is Dalet without a doggish, without, what is a doggish in English? A dot in the Dalet. So really, one should say, the Yemenite says, Ahoz. And it's written that we have to marich, we have to make the Dalet long. And if you say it the D, you can't do it. So the Z, that of Yemenite, you can prolong the when you say a chaz forever.
Okay, now let's get back to your wines. Let's get back to your wines for a second.
Yes.
I started out with a bottle of your Grüner Veltliner.
Yes.
And I found it. And I found a little bit of a peppery overtones.
Yes.
Yet it's a light wine. Somewhat acidic, but very light. And I found it perfect when I paired it with a very creamy mushroom soup, and even better when I made it with my version of Austrian Tafelspitz.
Wow.
Which is boiled beef.
So I think you should be working
full-time pairing.
Chaim, I think you should be working full-time public relations for De La Rosa Vineyard. And you could be having free wine for the rest of your life. I hope my wife would, I'm sure she would agree with it. Because you are a very sweet Jew, you know. And to be a sweet Jew is better than a rich Jew, to be then a religious Jew. Sweetness, a heart, a smile, happy to see people. Everybody except the wicked, of course. We want to see the wicked.
Of course. Now, at Kosher Fest, I also tasted some of the ice wines.
Yes.
And I believe one of them was a Gewürztraminer.
Yes.
And you also had a...
I'm not very good about the wine. My wife is much more aware of the wine. What? Oh, we have here the catalog of the wine, so...
And I know that you also had a Riesling.
Riesling, we have a Riesling.
Austria is quite famous for its Gewürztraminer and the Riesling.
Yes.
As ice wines, they were superb.
Yeah, wonderful.
Perfect dessert wine.
I'm so happy to hear it, Chaim. I think I should make a plaque of your name when we build the office building for De La Rosa. And you should have a big plaque with your name saying, he loves the wine, Chaim. We put names on the wine to make it sound Jewish if it fell into the hand of Avraham Avinu. For instance, we call it Ashrei Chardonnay. We call it, Taryag, another wine.
The Taryag is a... That one was
the Grüner Veltliner. Yain Royal, Oneg Pinot Noir. So we're trying to convert the wines to, at least to start with, with names, Jewish names or Hebrew names.
Of course.
Whether it will impress Washington chefs, I'm not sure. Who knows? You know, you never know.
Let me tell you something. A lot of non-kosher restaurants are now offering kosher wines because the quality of the kosher wine has come a long, long way from 20, 30 years ago. The old joke used to be, you want a kosher wine? No problem. Buy any wine, throw out half the bottle, fill it up with sugar, mix it well, you have a kosher wine.
But
that
the
used
beauty
to be the
is
joke.
That,
but thank God
yes, joke,
we are out of that.
You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a very wise way to publicize the Torah. So there is problem with the bris, the mitzvah in Brooklyn. There's a problem in Europe with Sweden with the bris. There is a problem with the kosher. Why? Because we have to publicize the whole phenomenon of the Jew. Israel is in the news every day, so everybody thinks, well, Israel is a Jew, so we have to think of a Jew, and so on and so on. Then you have the Holocaust. I mean, I don't know what it means. My grandchild of four, Avraham Chaim, says to me, Zaidi, what is Holocaust? I say, Holocaust is mass murder. That's what I say. You know, there's a museum, a Holocaust museum. And there is an art museum. Why they use the word museum is beyond me, you know? So, but I don't have to understand everything, right?
Right. We're not meant to.
We're not meant to, exactly. Anyway, we have also, what is it called? We have a very nice 14 years, what? I don't know the word. I always forget the word. A brandy, which... What? The name is Brandy what? X-O Avraham.
Mm-hmm.
Bet, I'm not sure that Avraham Avinu would have drank it, but he would have given it to the, I'm sure he would have given it to the angels. So,
okay.
You know, it this all started in heaven. You know, the whole wine business started in heaven. I'll tell you why. Because it's written, Yain Yesamach Levav Enosh. And Enosh was the biggest idolater. He worshipped idols. And it's written, wine would make his heart happy. So maybe we could convert the whole world to become more with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, who is organic kosher wine. Who knows? Maybe.
Okay, it's interesting.
Tell me more things. What else can I say?
Some people do Kirov by approaching them, you know, and trying to teach. And sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. You're doing it with wine, I think. That should be a very successful way of doing it.
Yeah, my sweet wife told me about, we have organic vinegars, and we have, wine vinegar, organic wine vinegar, balsamic vinegar. You know, we are very with it. But my main way to publicize Yiddishkeit and the Ten Commandments is with the film project, which you know.
Yes.
And
that's what I was going to ask you next, because we are approaching the end, and I want to cover your film project. In fact, when I posted about it in the blog, I spoke about it. When I posted about it on the social media, I spoke about it. So the least we can do is talk about it.
Yeah. Well, the name of it, which I put into, is Prince of Fire. It's basically it attempts to define the Jew. What is a Jew? In the Holy Land, they had this political thing of who is a Jew. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, illustrious, was trying to tell Israel to make sure that they define the who is a Jew. But my whole thing is, what is a Jew? What makes a Jew? And of course, they had the Pew report about what's happening to Jewish people in America.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the Orthodox is growing, and who knows? Maybe every Jew in America will be Orthodox. Who knows? Very, very, it's possible. Anything is possible. So the film is the story, which is, of course, I made it into, because the story of Avraham ben Avraham, the Ger Tzedek, the convert of Vilna, who is buried next to the Gaon of Vilna, and he was also at the time of the Baal Shem Tov and Moshe Chaim Lutzato, and I'm trying to tell the world what is a Jew through what, why did he convert, what makes a non-Jew, a Catholic, who is going to be the Archbishop of Poland, a Jew, and then to accept and to agree and to be burnt at the age of 36 on the day of Matan Torah, to be burnt at the age of 36. So I've made this story. A lot of it is fiction, because the church hid the history of this Prince Valenti. So I wrote a story. It will be a 2-hour film. And I've got the first draft, and I'm trying now to rewrite it and make it a useful screenplay. And, of course, Mr. Spielberg would be the ideal Jew, who is, I understand, married to a convert, to a Gioris, and he's equipped, and he'll be able to do it. But I don't know how to get to him, because, you know, I'm not very savvy about getting connections. You know, I'm still an old-fashioned person from Jerusalem. So if Mr. Spielberg makes it, it will be bigger than I was told it will be bigger than what he made about, what's the name of the film that he made about the Jews, the man who saved the Jews. What was his name?
Oh,
He made a very big film, and it took him many years to decide to do it. Schindler's List. It doesn't define the Jew. I claim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he made the world, there was a light before the light of the sun, and it was all Hagonus, the hidden light. And it's written that he hid it in the Torah, in the Jewish scripture, in order that it should not be used by the wicked, meaning abused, translated in the wrong way, and there'll be another religion called the hidden light. And I claim, hopefully humbly, that the hidden light is the identity of the Jew. The world has to know what a Jew. And the first, the Jewish world has to know what a Jew is before they assimilate, before they marry, before Arthur Miller marries Monroe, he has to know what a Jew is, you know, and this is a secret. And of course, the non-Jewish world has no idea, right? They know about the Holocaust, they know about Israel, they know about the Muslims, the Iranians with their atom. This they know, but what is a Jew? What makes a Jew a Jew? And what's the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew? What is it? The chosen people, chosen. What is there, you know, it's written by Avraham Avinu that he converted the man, and Sarah Mani converted the women. That was before Matan Torah, right, before the Ten Commandments. So the pasuk, the verse says, "Et es anefesh asher asu beharan." Beharan, that nefesh is a collective assembly of souls that they made asu. They made in Beharan, in a place called Haran, which is in Iraq. But I said Beharan is Bohar Bahen. He chose them. It's the same letters. The name Beharan is also Bahar Bahen, which is feminine. It's the end of noon. So I claim that the Gerim, the converts, were the offspring of Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu before he had the bris at 99, and before Sarah Imenu had the boy Yitzchok. All the souls that were so-called assembled throughout Kodesh Baruch Hu and Avraham and Sarah, the offspring, the spiritual offspring of Avraham and Sarah, are the Gerim. And it's written by Matan Torah that Et Asher Yeshno Po Hayom, whoever was there with a body or without a body, are all the Jews. And I believe maybe there are a billion Gerim in the world. I don't know. Who knows? So that I want to film Prince of Fire to bring these people back to their real identity. That's what I hope. So it's a very small ambition, right, Chaim? So if Mr. Spielberg or somebody else or a Gerd Zedek or somebody who wants to do the right thing, he can call me and he can have organic wine and brandy and grappa. I'm appointing you to be the public relations of the film.
Okay.
You'll be paid, we'll no volunteers. We don't want volunteers.
Okay. We'll talk, Be'ezus Hashem.
Okay,
and we are just about out of time. It was indeed a very, very interesting conversation. I wish we had more time. There were so many other subjects, so many other questions I never got to cover. We'll have to do it again soon.
Sure. So would anybody call, ask question? Is that possible or what?
I did not make the announcement. I asked your wife whether there would be anybody calling in.
Yeah,
I did not make the announcement for
in?
People
Can
to call in.
In We didn't arrange for anybody to call in, so I don't know.
Okay. I used to make announcements for people to call in, and some of my guests were not very happy about being put on the spot by a caller, you know, on a question they had not prepared.
I
left it up to the guest after that because I don't get in trouble that way.
I would love the President of the United States to call in. And I'll tell
I'm
him
afraid
a big
he does not listen to Chaim Schmidt. You know, just
you'll
a hunch. I'm not sure, but it's just a hunch.
You'll be surprised. You never know. You never know
NSA
what could happen.
Does. The NSA probably does. But the president himself, I don't know for sure.
Listen, it would be very good for him to talk to, to listen to a Jew like me rather than the other Jews. Believe me. Because the other Jews don't tell him the truth. They don't tell him the truth. They don't tell him the truth. You know, what he's doing in America with the tolerance of, you know, the whole thing of marriage between men, this is beyond understanding that we Jews are not protesting. You know, it's amazing.
Right.
We haven't got the guts, or it doesn't pay, or I don't know what it is. We should go to Washington, all the Jews in America, and protest. Because this exactly, this thing brought the end, brought in Bereshis Rabbah the flood of Noah. That decision.
That's right. And it also was what destroyed the Greek Empire and later on the Roman Empire.
That's right.
Exactly.
But that decision of man marrying man brought the flood. That was the straw that broke Hashem, because Baruch Hu tolerated anything except that.
Right.
And today there wouldn't be a flood, there's fire. Firearms. Every day, firearms. People are murdered. You know?
Right.
Why?
Right.
You know, it doesn't make sense. And they are looking for motive. But a lot of these murderers kill themselves, so they can't be interviewed. All right. This is political.
Okay. Very good.
Okay, Chaim. I'm very grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to your parents who brought you about into this world to allow me to talk.
Okay. Thank you very much. And good night, one and all.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I don't know. You heard me moving. What did you hear? It was good. What was maybe...